There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
We've actually started to deploy shopping carts that have our Instacart technology embedded in them, so you can take your Instacart shopping list into the store. We also announced at CES ads on Caper, so now the same ability to reach consumers in those high-intent, highly measurable moments will come to the aisles of the grocery store. So it's really exciting to see this business diversification and to think about, you know, how much of the grocery ecosystem that Instacart can power and really how it can make the consumer experience so much more seamless.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Marketing Vanguard podcast. I'm Jenny Rooney. I'm the Chief Experience Officer here at Adweek, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by Laura Jones. Laura is the CMO of Instacart. Laura, thank you so much for joining me. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have this conversation. I think with all of our Marketing Vanguard conversations, we talk to people who are, through their actions and decisions, literally changing the trajectory of their brand, their business, the industry at large. And, you know, listen, there's a lot in being a chief marketing officer that has influence, you know, and I think, Laura, you've done some pretty extraordinary things at Instacart and before that even, that that are right in line with that. You know, the choices you're making intentionally, seemingly very intentionally, people watch that, you know, and they learn from that. So I'm excited to unpack that in the next half hour or so. Before we get started, just please introduce yourself to everybody listening. Tell us a little bit about you and obviously what you're doing here. But before you get to what you're doing here, tell us a little bit about your background and what you've done prior.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I am currently the Chief Marketing Officer at Instacart. I am coming up on 3 years at Instacart. Mm-hmm. So really exciting. We also just crossed 1 billion orders delivered. So
you're crossing a lot of thresholds there.
A lot of thresholds.
10-year threshold. Yeah, that's great. Good for you.
Yeah. And prior to Instacart, I spent 6 years at Uber working in product marketing and leading the global rides marketing team there. Prior to that, I was at Google, Visa with Antonio Lucio back in that mm-hmm. era. Mm-hmm. Got my MBA from Stanford and started out my career in consulting. So quite a journey to get here, but really thrilled to have gotten to this place.
I got to ask you, are you a brand marketer or a performance marketer?
Both.
You personally.
You know, I came up as a product marketer, but I really have moved away from a distinction between brand and performance. And at Instacart, we run our entire budget as an integrated budget, and all of our work has to deliver on both performance and brand metrics. So mm-hmm. I now identify as both a brand marketer and a performance marketer.
You know, we had Marissa Thalberg at one of our events recently, and she just said, the title of the discussion was performance versus brand. And she's like, can we please scratch that out and make it performance and brand? And so in real time, we changed the slide so that it would actually be representative of the shift in the conversation in that moment. So, but it's a shift that's been being talked about for a while now. So, you know, tell me your vantage point. Obviously, all that knowledge, all that expertise and sort of prior career experience you're bringing to your role now at Instacart or have been bringing. Talk a little bit about that. Like, what had you learned at those other companies? And by the way, overwhelmingly tech companies, which is just obviously so interesting to bring to Instacart.
Yeah, I think that my philosophy as a marketer is really rooted in the customer, as I hope all marketers would say. But certainly the guiding philosophy for me is actually something I learned at Stanford when I was studying there to get my MBA. I spent a lot of time at the D School at Stanford, which is a design thinking institute, and I learned about customer-centric design and really looking to the end user for insights and inspiration to really form that brief. And that is something that served me well throughout my career, taught me about how to use the consumer as a rallying point for bringing cross-functional partners together, and really how to gauge success through the lens of consumer adoption. I, you know, as you said, I spent most of my career in tech, and one thing that is incredible about tech is just the feedback loops and the amount of data you do get on user behavior and the visibility, and so you're really able to understand if what you're building and what you're marketing is resonating with that user, how it's changing their behavior, and you have the opportunity to iterate and change your strategy, your offering, your marketing if it's not working. And so I think that those principles of being consumer-led, of being or user-led, if you might be in B2B, being customer-led, and really having that iterative learning loop where you can test and continue to refine both the product and the marketing have been skills that have really threaded throughout that journey.
Mm. When you joined Instacart, what kind of a company was it?
Yeah, so I joined in June of 2021, and I remember thinking, you know, if the global pandemic didn't get you to try online grocery, that was going to be my job. In the end, the pandemic wasn't actually over in June 2021. There were several more surges. So, you know, the journey has been a really interesting one of both meeting demand during those surges where this was really a critical lifeline, as well as learning how to grow outside of those exogenous demand shocks, right? Making sure we didn't become a COVID stock that, or we weren't a stock, I'm sorry, a COVID product, if you will, that, you know, saw adoption collapse afterwards. And obviously, speaking of stocks, when I joined, we were still a private company, and we just went public in September of 2023. And so it was really about how do we control our own growth levers and prepare ourselves to enter the public markets. And so it was really a really incredible journey. I also went through the IPO journey at Uber. This one, I would say, closer to the action and felt so proud of just the amount of work that it took for everyone involved to get us to that milestone. And really, again, this billion order mark is one that I think signifies kind of the maturity of the business and how far we've come. But the exciting part is that grocery, online grocery is still, you know, not a highly penetrated category. So even though on the one hand, you know, a billion orders is tremendous, the amount of headroom that we can still go and tackle is tremendous. And that's what keeps it really fun and exciting.
So talk about that headroom. Like, what does that look like? Where is that? You know, is it, and how are you sort of showing up there? You know, I obviously know that as a business, you know, moving into the retail media space, for example, is a diversification from a fundamental business standpoint. But as a brand, as a consumer brand, where also are you diversifying and gaining new visibility?
Yeah, you know, I think it's really about changing the perception of, you know, when you would choose online grocery. I think with the pandemic, you know, a lot of people, it was their only lifeline. And then I think you have a cohort that uses it sometimes. And what we're really excited to do as a brand is to help people understand that this is a routine that you can use either as your primary weekly shop, as I do and as most of our customers and many of our customers do, or can be a supplement to an in-store shopping you know, routine. And so a lot of what we're trying to do is just continue to bring new customers into the category, give them a chance to try the service, and then show them all the different use cases that we can serve. Again, whether that's a fill-in shop, a weekly shop, or even new verticals, like we have Sephora on the platform, or Lowe's. And so it's this really great opportunity.
Don't tell my daughter you have Sephora on the platform, because she would be downloading it tomorrow. So
yeah,
yes,
that is definitely a popular one. So it's really about bringing new customers in and, you know, helping them to discover all the different use cases and then building that favorability and preference over time so that we can really be the go-to, the first port of call. We are, you know, certainly the industry leader, but making sure that as new people come into the category, we maintain that leadership is incredibly important.
And by the way, before you go on to the business diversification with the retail meetings, everything you just described, you could arguably apply the same description to Uber, right? Like this concept of like having it become part and parcel of your daily lives. It can be either become your go-to and the way you travel everywhere, or it can be supplemental to other ways that you travel. And it's also being the category leader, like, you know, the push for that. So I don't know. I'm sure, like I said, about the learnings that you've gained throughout the course of your career, there's a lot of parallels. Visa, I mean, all the things, right? Like, these are about brands that become part of people's daily lives and in large or small ways.
I absolutely love that and agree. That's always what has motivated me to join companies, is companies and products that I love, that I use, that I'm a believer in. At Google, Larry Page had what he called the toothbrush test, and it was, you know, do you use this service twice a day? Now, I don't use Instacart twice a day, but not too far off from that. But certainly Instacart, Uber, were a part of my life as a consumer before I joined. And what was really exciting was the challenge of continuing to bring them to more people, wider audiences, more diverse audience spaces, and really build that brand love and drive adoption. So definitely a lot of parallels there. And similarly, you know, business line diversification at Uber, it was about, you know, moving from rides to Eats and More. And at Instacart, you know, as I said, we've started to really get into some of these new verticals. And as you alluded to, we also, of course, have really invested a lot in our retail media network. And that, you know, of course, is a term we talk a lot about in the industry. But it's really exciting, I think, because as somebody who's buying ads, I really understand and think a lot about things like incrementality and the ability to really track purchases. And what's so great about retail media, and specifically about the Instacart ads offerings, is that they are all incredibly measurable, actionable. They're in the moment when someone is literally building their cart. So we can really drive those conversions and drive consideration through new formats we have, like video ads. Another exciting way that we're diversifying the business is getting into in-store as well. And so I mentioned earlier that, you know, we're okay if you want to do all your grocery shopping through Instacart, but we're also super supportive of people who still really enjoy going to the grocery store. And there's so many people for whom that's the case. And that's why a few years back we acquired Caper AI, which is a computer vision company that has made a smart shopping cart. And so we've actually started to deploy shopping carts that have our Instacart technology embedded in them, so you can take your Instacart shopping list into the store. We also announced at CES ads on Caper, so now the same ability to reach consumers in those high-intent, highly measurable moments will come to the aisles of the grocery store. So it's really exciting to see this business diversification and to think about, you know, how much of the grocery ecosystem that Instacart can power and really how it can make the consumer experience so much more seamless.
Agreed. That's what I'm taking away, is it's solving for two things, or it's bringing new value to all sides of the equation. I mean, the consumer gets value in sort of like the flywheel, if you will, of the shopping experience. And then obviously you're creating new opportunities for your partners in that regard. So fascinating. How did you have to build the marketing org to accomplish this? Because I'm sure that coming in, you know, there might have not been the capabilities, the skills, not to mention the org design, the processes in place to realize externally, you know, the external facing goals that you as CMO wanted to accomplish. So how'd you do that?
When I joined, there was a small but mighty performance marketing team and CRM team. And many of those folks are actually still on the team. And they had built some really, really strong fundamentals. In the early days, we relied a lot on inbound marketing. And by that, you know, search, Google Shopping ads, et cetera. And then our CRM team really built out an incredible system from the get-go, but we were missing fundamental capabilities like brand or product marketing. And so a lot of what the journey has been for me was first starting to build out some of those net new capabilities and then really integrating those other teams into a single org and having that org feel like a unified team as opposed to different groups of people marching in different directions. And that's been a real journey. I think, you know, one pivotal moment was when we decided to do away with the difference between our brand media and performance media budgets that I mentioned at the beginning. You know, when I was first building out brand, I, you know, started to build out a brand media team and we had, you know, totally separate budgets, but it was really, we had a lot of trouble measuring the brand budget and the performance world. We weren't, you know, investing enough in really making sure that that creative was breaking through. And so you had kind of two hands almost not talking to one another. And I realized, you know, let's put this together. Let's put all the rigor of performance marketing behind all of our media. And let's put all the creative energy from our brand and creative team into every dollar that we put into the ecosystem. Anytime we're asking for someone's attention, shouldn't we be trying to engage them and entertain them in a really thoughtful way? And I think that was a really transformational moment when we brought the team together, unified our goals, and made it clear that we didn't see a distinction. And I think that served us well. We've actually had a really great win recently where we were able to definitively show that one of our more emotive ads actually had better cost per activation than one of our more kind of direct response ads. And so we kind of felt we had come full circle in really proving out the hypothesis that, you know, better creative and more emotional creative wouldn't just build the brand, it would also drive performance.
Unbelievable. And that, you know, the question that was going through my mind, but I think you answered it, is do technologists need to think more like marketers or do marketers need to think more like technologists in general?
Again, I'm going to go with both because
say yes.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I do think marketers must think like technologists. We are in such an incredible age of technology with so many tools that can grant us superpowers, and that's only going to accelerate with generative AI and so much innovation going on in that area. So I definitely think that marketers need to understand technology, need to harness it, need to use it as a tool. And I also think technologists need to think like marketers, because if you build a piece of tech and nobody ever uses it, what was the point? You know,
totally.
It's not going to get out there. It's not going to change people's lives. It's not going to change the world. And so I always really, when I'm working with my technical counterparts, really encourage all of us to think about adoption from the get-go and really build for adoption from day one. And so I think the best products are built by integrated teams where marketers, engineers, product managers, designers, data scientists all really work together as a single unit in pursuit of building something amazing that people want to use.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
booze.
Yeah. Side comment, and I don't want to go too far down this path because we don't have that much time, but I'm obsessed with, and you have such an extraordinary education, I'm obsessed with what's being taught in the classroom, you know, at certainly at the undergraduate, but certainly on the at the NBA level, and how are schools able to, you know, keep up with what we just talked about. I mean, it's such a new way of thinking about teaching the discipline of marketing. And certainly I know there are schools that are meeting that demand, but in general, I just think it's just fascinating. I think the more folks like you can spend time in classrooms, right, and actually sort of take the knowledge you built when you were on campus, brought into your work world, but now all the expertise that you've brought from your practical leadership experience, bringing that back, it's just that continuum. I'm so passionate about how much are you doing that personally. You know, what are your thoughts just on how we as an industry can make sure that we're teaching the next generation of marketing leaders these kinds of things that are so nuanced and frankly so complex and different than what we typically have taught in the past?
I couldn't agree more. I think it's so important for academia and industry to be in conversation. And I certainly get back into the classroom whenever I can. I've been working a little bit with Stanford on their entrepreneurship program. I also guest taught a lecture with Wharton this year. And I still also call on people from academia, from my own days at Stanford, to engage with us, too. I had one of my friends and classmates who now works in the D school come and give a talk to all of us at Instacart to help us continue to push our own thinking and really benefit from all the incredible research and insight that they have on campus. So I think that conversation between those two worlds is incredibly important, and especially, you know, as we enter this next age of AI and so many groundbreaking technologies that will sit right at that, you know, bleeding line between research and industry, there couldn't be a better time to push on this. So I absolutely agree and love that that's something that you're passionate about, because I definitely share that passion.
Yeah, actually, we as Adweek have our first ever Marketing Vanguard summit coming up in May, and it's a leadership summit for chief marketers, and we're having it. Actually, it's hosted at the Chicago Booth School of Business in Chicago. At their Gleacher Center on Michigan Avenue. And I just think, you know, it provides sort of a really cool backdrop, I think, for sort of the mind meld that's going to come into that room. And, you know, it's going to enable us to have a mashup of practitioners and academics, and then so many other thought leaders and thinkers, you know, and creators in between those two cohorts. But I just, to me, I get so inspired by the mashup. You know, that sort of coming together in the collaboration and the thought, you know, the knowledge swap that's possible. So anyway, but next question, and I asked this question, I'm so curious about your leadership style just as a marketing leader yourself, especially taking all this knowledge and information that you've gained over the course of your career. What kind of a leader are you? And I'm going to start with this question that I ask of all of my guests, which is let's put it in the context of a sports team, because I think, I don't know, to me, I just feel like business teams are the best analogy is a sports team. I mean, you have to be so like trusting of your, you know, fellow teammates and anticipate their next move and have them anticipate your next move. I mean, that's what makes for so many great achievements in sport. Talk a little bit about how you find yourself on that field, that playing field. Are you sort of in the offensive line, you know, trying to sort of directly score goals against your competitor? Are you the midline, kind of like holding down the fort between and being that connective tissue between the offense and defense? Or do you find yourself as a leader sort of really in defensive mode, really protecting your goal at all costs from the competition coming in?
I like the midfielder position, I think, because I do view so much of my role as enabling people to do their best work. And
do you think that's a marketer-specific thing, or is it a Laura-specific thing?
I'm not totally sure. I think that earlier in my career, I certainly, you know, loved being right at that front line and trying to kind of be the person on the front line shooting the goal. And now I really do feel like my job is to get other people into that position for success where they can shoot and score. And be there to get them the resources that they need, be there to remove barriers and blockers, really focus on communication and connecting the dots. I think that, you know, in the leadership position, you have visibility to the whole field, right? You can see everything that's going on, and that's unique because nobody else has that point of view. And so then so much of your job is to provide that perspective, be able to help, you know, zoom in and help someone kind of unblock themselves and then zoom out and tie whatever happened there to the broader context that's going on. So definitely really like the idea of being in the middle, kind of helping people propel themselves forward. And of course, always protecting the defensive line and the goal,
because we're all competitive,
part of
right?
what we do here.
For sure. We just want to win. But, you know, where do you think marketing lives right now, just in general? I mean, obviously, there's so many headlines, and I think it's cyclical. We'll see headlines saying, you know, the demise of the CMO is upon us. And then, you know, the next week we'll see somebody's been newly named to CMO position. Where is your head with regard to sort of the back and forth discourse and the narrative that continues to swirl around marketing and in particular the chief marketing officer role?
I think it's really rooted in the results that we can drive. I think that when there, you know, is clear alignment between the CMO and the CEO and the CFO and the rest of the C-suite of what is this job responsible for, what are the core metrics that I own, and then, you know, my job as the CMO is to deliver those. I don't think those are the companies that will be, you know, removing the CMO role. I think that places where I think there it comes into question is when there it's harder for a company to articulate the impact of the function and harder for them to frankly show the street and the market, like, why are we investing here? And so I think to the extent that we can all hold ourselves accountable, and those goals may differ by company. Some companies may care a tremendous amount about in-period sales goals. Other companies may care much more about longer arc brand awareness or brand preference. But as long as there's clear alignment of what is the CMO there to drive, and that person can then deliver on those results, I think that we will continue to be incredibly valued. And I also think, like, the letters themselves, is it CMO?
Is it
Chief Growth Officer? Does it matter? I think the question is, who's out there really thinking about that customer, really thinking about driving adoption and bringing those insights back to the rest of the company so that that company can continue to get better, stay innovative, and keep growing their market share?
Yeah. Cannes is coming up not too far out from now. All about creativity. I mean, historically all about creativity, and yet it's morphed into so many more things. But fundamentally, the role of creativity in marketing and advertising, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Where are you right now? Not just at Instacart, but, you know, what are your thoughts generally on the role that needs to play, especially as AI becomes much more of a influence?
Creativity is why I'm a marketer. Mm-hmm. I started my career in a very analytical field, but found myself at night in the painting studio, just in my happy place, and I still to this day paint. And I have always just loved and been attracted to the act of creation and being able to express oneself creatively. Now, the most, you know, the way that I do that in my own personal time is a very ancient and old way with, you know, a paintbrush and a canvas, and that's just what I find soothing. But I think what's so cool now is that we have so many tools. And to me, AI is just a way smarter paintbrush. It's the paintbrush of this era, of this moment. And so, you know, I think creativity is always going to be the fuel of this industry. I mean, ultimately, what we're doing as marketers is trying to change people's behaviors. And the way that you do that is by getting their attention and informing them of something new and getting them to try. And I think that's always going to require an act of creativity to warrant somebody paying attention, listening to what you have to say, considering and acting on that. So I think creativity is as important, if not more important, than it ever was, because now the palette that we can paint with is just so much broader. And, you know, even if someone maybe was trained in visual design. Now they can do copywriting or vice versa. Like, there's so much more. I think all of us who are, you know, not coders are also going to be wildly enabled to get more technical and create pieces of code. So to me, this is just kind of the next era of creative empowerment. And so I really hope that the conversations that we have are less about, you know, will AI replace creativity and more like, how do we fuel this tool with creativity? How do we use this to make things that are better than our wildest dreams?
Are you sampling it? Are you experimenting with it? Are you implementing? How are you doing that at Instacart?
Yeah. And we have, as a company, I think, been a very early adopter of AI. Mm-hmm. We partnered early on with OpenAI and built some really cool AI tools into the product. So we now have open-ended search. So you can say, you know, what can I pack as a nut-free lunch for my six-year-old? true question, true story. And it gives you ideas, right? It's so generating cool. Net new concepts instead of me having to go in and say, oh, I need sunseed butter. I need this kind of bread. It's giving me new ideas. We've also used it in maybe less exciting ways, for example, to refine search. So, you know, one great example of how we've done this is that apparently in the UK, the term for sprinkles is hundreds of thousands. I didn't know this. And it used to be that if you would go into our search and just type hundreds of thousands, you would get like Thousand Island dressing, because it was like, You search the word thousand, here's thousand. Wow. But you didn't want Thousand Island dressing. You wanted sprinkles. And now with AI, it can go in and be like, oh, you said hundreds of thousands, and that means sprinkles. So even though the words aren't related, that is a knowledge base that it's able to draw on. We've also had some, you know, flubs. Like, we tested some AI-generated imagery. And, you know, it was interesting. It's not quite there yet. So we're not doing that at the moment. But, you know, it will probably get there. And there's obviously a lot of issues around copyrights and IPs. And I mean, I think always, you know, policy first, and really making sure we're doing everything in a way that respects creators' rights and respects safety and all such things. So it's always kind of about pacing oneself. But I think from an experimentation standpoint, you know, it's great to, especially kind of in your own sandbox of your own company, play around with it. We have an internal bot called Ava that you can kind of ask questions to in Slack, and that draws upon our own knowledge base. So again, I think all of this is kind of in its very, very nascent form, but the power here is tremendous, and something that, you know, just as we would with any other new technology, we should absolutely be playing with it, figuring out where there are value add use cases for customers, where there's actual value you can provide, not just kind of a shiny new toy, but something that will really unlock a better experience. And then for all of us internally, like, how can it be a superpower for our own internal teams, for our creatives, and for ourselves, frankly?
Yeah, for sure. Last quick question. I ask this of everybody, but who's next? Who else should we interview next for the Marketing Vanguard podcast? It could be somebody that you're really good friends with, and a CMO you admire because of the work that they've done. It could be somebody who you don't know, but you admire from afar. Who should we interview?
You may have already interviewed him, as he's an industry legend, but my kind of mentor, guru, life coach is Jonathan Mildenhall.
I love Jonathan, yes.
Yes, I've been working with him.
Haven't interviewed him yet for Marketing Vanguard, but yes, we're going to get him on.
I mean, there you go. That's a must-have. I mean, Jonathan is one of the people that I have most admired in the industry from very early on, and I was so lucky a few years ago to get to work with him on a project through 21st Century Brand, and then he became my coach, and we've been working together for a few years, and it's just been transformational. And so really, I feel like he is someone that this entire industry has so much to learn from. So I will very much be excited to tune in when you have a chance to interview him.
I will do that. I will let you know. Laura, thank you so, so much for being here. It's so good to see you and catch up with you, as always. Next time, let's do it in person, hopefully very, very soon. But thank you so much.
Thank you. I would love that.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, are you ready to elevate your personal brand or company? Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for video content and audience building. Imagine growing your brand organically on social media without the hassle of editing videos for hours. With Viral Growth, it's a breeze. They handle the brainstorming, scripting, and editing while you simply just hit record. And don't worry about your niche. They cater to everyone, from business and marketing to health and wellness. Are you ready to make waves in the social media realm? Visit viralgrowth.io and use code ADWEEK, that's ADWEEK, all lowercase, and get 10% off your plan.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.